This Week in History.
Well, most memorials and statues are unveiled in honour of soldiers and politicians and explorers, and there aren't too many erected in honour of cats. But tonight in This Week in History on Nightlife, we're marking the 21st anniversary of the unveiling of a statue to an incredibly intrepid cat called Trim. Now, Trim was the constant companion of a certain Matthew Flinders, the sailor and explorer responsible for circumnavigating Australia in 1802. And in Trim's short life, he was shipwrecked, sailed around the continent, and imprisoned on the island of Mauritius. This week in 1996, a group of Trim's admirers erected a statue of him at the State Library of New South Wales. So tonight we're going to join the Trim fan club as well. State Library curator Rachel Franks knows all about Trim, and she also is pretty knowledgeable about Matthew Flinders as well. Hello, welcome to Nightlife.
Hello.
So tell us about Trim the cat. How did he come into Matthew Flinders' life?
Trim is a very intrepid cat, as you said. He was born in 1799 on the Reliance, and they were sailing from the Cape of Good Hope to Botany Bay. As a small kitten, he actually fell overboard, not quite the introduction to sea life that you want, but because he was able to scramble back up the ropes, he impressed everybody with his bravery and determination, and so quickly became a ship's favourite.
So they had cats on the ships, did they, for because of rat reasons or
yes,
as pets?
Yes, they are traditionally ratters, especially in the olden days. Rats would cause phenomenal damage to the ropes, which were essential to running a ship safely and successfully. They would also break into stores. And even as ships became more modern, cats still were wanted on board for safety and security because rats would eat the electrical components that replaced some of the more old-fashioned equipment on ships. And they also make very good friends.
Yes, that's right, in those lonely crossings in those days as well. So, but they hate water. So well done, Trim, for perhaps his hatred of water meant that, you know, Trim... What, climbed up the rescue rope or just climbed up the rope that
just
was dangling down?
Just climbed up
down?
A rope and managed to scramble successfully back on board. And I think that he always had that determination. So as you said, he survived shipwrecks, he survived almost all of his adventures, and he was just a naughty little feline that everybody sort of loved. There's this wonderful story about how he would tithe people's food. So he would turn up to dinner about 15 minutes before everybody else turned up for dinner. And he wouldn't make a fuss about it. There wasn't a lot of noise. He'd just sit patiently. And he didn't expect somebody's full plate of food, just a small amount from each person around the dinner table.
Oh, so he was a total operator.
Yes.
How did he become Matthew Flinders' cat?
I think Matthew quite liked his spirit, and I think that Trim quite liked his as well. And they were both young seamen, if you like, sort of out looking for adventure. And I think that the bond that they developed while they were the first captain and the first cat to circumnavigate Australia was quite robust. And I think that cats make us more human. And so Flinders was on the far side of the world. He hadn't been able to bring his wife with him on his great adventure that was going to sort of cement his career and cement his name in history. So that affection that he had, he was able to give to this cat, a slightly smaller companion than he would have hoped, but a loyal friend.
Did he name Trim or?
He did. He right. was named after the butler in Lawrence Stern's Tristram Shandy, and it was because he was sort of black and, you know, just had a little bit of white, and because he was a loyal friend. So,
how incredible. See, you know, you always think about men and their dogs, but here's a bloke and his cat.
That's
and,
right.
And a very historical story around it. I'm talking to Rachel Franks, New South Wales State Library curator, about Trim the cat, who was the constant companion of Matthew Flinders. So the cat was very much tolerated and I suppose, by the crew members, and even if they had to rescue Trim.
I think so, and I think that most people actually quite loved having an extra cat on board, and it's a little friend that you could fuss over and pet, and he sort of wandered around and occasionally did naughty things. He only stole food once. Apparently there was a large piece of mutton that was a bit too tempting, and he sort of teamed up with another cat. They didn't get very far, but that was sort of the only terrible thing that really he did. And there were rules about him taking food from others. If it was on the fork, it was still fair game, and if he swiped it, you were just too slow in your own dining habits. But if the food had actually made it into your mouth, that was off limits. So the paw wasn't able to come into the mouth and take something out. I think he tried that a couple of times.
What? But he would have scratched the person.
Well,
you're very nice about this, Kat. I mean, so he was allowed on the table while they're eating, and then if it was on the fork and he got to it before your mouth, is this all in the records?
Well, these are sort of the different stories that have come through from the journals. And, of course, Matthew Flinders wrote a lovely biography of his friend Trim. The original manuscript for that is one of the things that, unfortunately, the State Library of New South Wales doesn't hold, but it does have a very nice home. It's at the Greenwich Maritime Museum in London.
Right.
But he writes this very generous biography of his cat. He notes that he's a little bit vain, but on the whole a very constant companion.
And so can people still buy this biography of Trim the Cat?
Trim by Matthew Flinders has been republished, and it comes with a lovely introduction that discusses actually the statue that is now on the windowsill behind Matthew Flinders and the statue of him at the State Library of New South Wales. And it has very sweet illustrations by Annette MacArthur Onslow.
So Trim was with Flinders on his famous circumnavigation of Australia in 1801 and 1802. And so people who see the statue of Flinders will now understand why there's a cat. He's the first official cat to do so. Would have there been others before him?
Well, not in that context, because Flinders himself was the first man to circumnavigate. Mm. So other cats may have seen parts of Australia or done little bits and pieces here and there, but they possibly were more interested in ratting than being there with the great idea of this navigation of a continent and proving that the East Coast and New Holland was actually the same landmass. Mm.
But was he the only cat on board before we go into that voyage? I'm sure. I wonder if there were others. He was obviously the most important because he's the one that got the book and the statue.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell us about the circumnavigation and why this was such an incredibly important mission at the time.
It was really the thing that named Australia and consolidated and put us and Flinders on the map. So the idea that he was able to do this extraordinary voyage and pull together all the other little bits and pieces of cartography that had been done prior to that. So you have all sorts of maps going further back with various other people exploring that part and sort of looking for that idea of the Great South Land and proving its existence or otherwise. And so you have little snippets, and he was actually able to take all of those threads, improve on them, and join them all together. So his maps were in use for many, many decades after his death. There were little to improve upon in the first instance.
And tell us about this voyage and how long it took and a little bit more detail about it, because there was a famous encounter along the way with a French explorer as well.
Flinders was given captaincy of the Investigator, which left Portsmouth in July 1801, and they sighted Cape Leeuwin of Western Australia by the 6th of December of that year. So by January 1802, they're at the sea edge of what would later be named the Nullarbor Plain. And it's a really interesting part of the story because there were these immense cliffs. They're about 90 metres in height, which greatly overshadowed what was, in comparison, a tiny little ship with a mainmast of only 30 metres. And they couldn't actually see what was beyond those cliffs. And this gave rise to the idea that there was some fabulous inland sea, which of course then taunted inland explorers for decades afterwards, you know, looking for what they speculated might have been beyond those cliffs.
Right. So it was also an eventful voyage in that there was a famous encounter along the way with the French explorer Nicolas Baudin, is it?
Yes. So he was on a French ship. I apologise to all listeners for my French in advance, the Le Géographe or the Géographie. So Baudin had left France in October 1800. He was in charge of one of the best equipped voyages of discovery that had ever been mounted. They had a phenomenal crew. They had extensive equipment. They had a lot of scientists and artists on board. And they were also wanting to discover Australia, if you like.
Yeah, we could have all been French.
We could have all been French.
What happened to him? He later disappeared. So he met up with Flinders, what, on the... Did they actually kind of come close on the,
they
on
did.
The
they,
sea, or what happened?
They did. They Flinders actually named Encounter Bay for their interactions. Flinders didn't speak a lot of French at that time, but there were translators on board, and Baudin would have spoken some English at least. So they were able to communicate, but it possibly wasn't as rich an exchange of information as would have benefited both men.
Right, and then his expedition disappeared. That ship disappeared. So that's interesting that Flinders made it and he really didn't because he disappeared along the way. So was it? It must have been a big deal also because to get the funding for the expedition because Britain was technically at war with France at the time.
That's right, and Flinders had a very great champion in Sir Joseph Banks, who was still quite interested in Australia from his own explorations of New South Wales. And so he really championed the mission and ensured that it was appropriately funded, even in a time of quite rigorous constraint.
I was just looking at Sir Joseph Banks's books yesterday, actually, a copy I found in my mum's house with all the original drawings and the like. So Flinders got as far as the Wessel Islands, is it?
So yeah. They did undertake a complete circumnavigation of the continent, and then 10 weeks were spent at Sydney with the investigator moored near the present-day Sydney Opera House and a camp established on shore nearby. So while the ship underwent some urgent repairs and was repainted, Flinders started working on what would be his very famous charts of Australia, and the scientists that had accompanied him on the voyage, they went exploring in the local Sydney area.
Did the cat Trim get off the ship and go exploring in the area? Do you,
you
know?
You can imagine him exploring and sort of
killing the wildlife.
Well, not all cats should be labelled with that, although I'm sure if it was a choice between a Trim and a possum, I think Trim might have come off best, just quietly.
Did he get to go on shore, though, at that time?
I'm sure
you know?
He would have. I mean, he was quite a companionable animal, and he liked to follow people. And I think he was a natural adventurer. He certainly followed Flinders around when Flinders was interred on Mauritius a couple of years later. So he liked to be with people.
Right. Okay. So isn't that incredible to think about, you know, around the Opera House, Trim may have stepped in that area. We're talking to Rachel Franks, New South Wales State Library Curator for This Week in History, because in 1993 a statue was unveiled to Trim the cat, who was a very special friend of Flinders, who of course circumnavigated Australia. That's what we're talking about for This Week in History. So after Sydney, Flinders got on a ship called the Porpoise, and that was shipwrecked. What happened to the porpoise?
Well, the porpoise was unfortunately wrecked on a reef in the Coral Sea, which was a name bestowed by Flinders. The crew were able to reach the safety of a sandbank, which would be their rather unfortunate home for about 7 weeks, while Flinders with 12 others were able to return to Sydney in a cutter to secure some relief and rescue. Unfortunately, even though Flinders had recently written to Banks in June of 1803, sat describing himself as a young man just commencing his career, that particular shipwreck would actually mark the end of his career at age just 29. So while they made it back to Sydney, there was a trio of vessels, and Flinders was forced in his own vessel to seek some repair work. So he pulled into the Mauritius, which he hoped would be able to provide him with some relief and a safe refuge for a little while, but that was not to be the case.
And this is where Trim, the cat, disappears from the records.
That's right. Poor Trim.
What happened?
So Flinders had been accused of being a spy, and he would spend 6.5 years in detention under the command of the French governor there. And Trim had not lost his adventurous spirit despite all sorts of things befalling him, from shipwrecks and incarcerations and different types of adventures along the way.
Hang on, who incarcerated Trim?
Well, he was incarcerated with Flinders on Mauritius.
Oh, Mauritius, yeah, right. Okay, so they locked him up as well. They were like, you and your cat.
It was a very gentle detention in many ways. So while Flinders was desperate to return home, work on his charts, publish his work, be reunited with his wife and continue on with his career, he would actually spend 6.5 years under a very generous house arrest. So while he wasn't allowed to move very far, he was not in a traditional prison cell.
Right.
He was able to move about the island
with his cat.
Some freedom with his cat. But unfortunately, Trim also was exploring the island, and it is widely believed that he was eaten by somebody who was very hungry.
So he just disappeared one day, and that's presumed what
happened.
That
is the end of the Trim story.
Oh, what? Who ate Trim? Flinders must have been so upset.
He was devastated. So, and that was, I think, part of his memorial to Trim, and you see that coming through. It's interesting how some people say that they're either dog people or cat people, but I think it doesn't really matter which sort of four-footed companion you want to align yourself with. I think animals make us all a little bit more human. And you see often the history books present Flinders as a very ambitious cartographer and ambitious navigator, but he was also very much like us. And you see that in his writings of Trim.
That was, well, he spent as much time with Trim the cat nearly as his poor wife did, really, didn't he?
So poor Anne Chappell was, there were plans that she was going to sort of whisk away at sea, but that was discovered just before Flinders' departure from England, and I think the word foolhardy was mentioned, and so he decided that he would, after all, leave her behind.
What, because it would have been foolhardy for a woman to travel?
Well, there was a bit of that, and I think there was a bit of, you have a very important mission. We don't want you distracted. We want you concentrating on leading the ship and the crew and, of course, the very important scientific component of that work.
So Flinders was on Mauritius for 6 years. Trim the cat disappears after a couple
about,
of them.
Yeah, about 1805.
All right. So Trim's gone. He's on Mauritius. How does he get back eventually? Do you know? Or what happens? He's released from arrest.
He's actually released, and he's able to go back to England, where he's reunited with Anne Chappell, his wife. They have a daughter, Anne, but he doesn't live much longer than that. He dies at only 40. I'll just quickly correct that. So poor Trim, born in 1799, actually died in 1804. 10 years later, in 1814, his master Flinders would also die.
Okay, so Flinders went back to his poor wife and they had a child, and then he died. And there's news this week that the graveyard in which Flinders is thought to be buried, just near Euston Station in London, is in the process of being dug up, and it's not clear where his body is.
No, there's actually a little bit of controversy as to where he was buried and if that was moved and if the environment around him moved, and so therefore he was in a different part of a cemetery. But it's an absolutely extraordinary operation that they're going to undertake. It's a bit like a Gothic novel, really, sort of exhuming 60,000 bodies and moving a bat colony nearby. So I think some people will be very hopeful that Flinders will be discovered, but I understand that in such a phenomenally large grave, he will need to be very clearly marked. I believe that they actually need him to be in a coffin that will have a plate on it that
no
actually
gravestone.
Says
right.
Flinders.
How bizarre, there's no gravestone, because he was not recognised for his importance, obviously, at the time as he is now.
I think it was very difficult for the men who captained these voyages to be recognised for their achievements, simply because what we see now is obviously a magnificent achievement in creativity and cartography, but most people had seen maps and charts before, and even though these were depicting lands that nobody was particularly familiar with, they didn't have that great flamboyance of the natural history illustrations that were going from Australia back to England. So I think for the cartographers, it was hard to compete. You know, it was a very traditional, scientific mapping of a continent, but it didn't have those fabulous colour schemes of birds that nobody had ever seen before.
Yes, that, you know, exciting, like what the heck is that animal, yes, kind of thing. I'm talking to Rachel Franks, New South Wales State Library curator, because in 1993, in this week, a group of admirers of Trim the Cat erected a statue of him at the State Library in New South Wales. So tell us about this statue, Rachel.
It's a very beautiful statue. So if you haven't seen it, you need to walk down Macquarie Street. And just behind the very large traditional statue of Matthew Flinders, which is on the Mitchell Forecourt, erected in 1925, if you look beyond the moat and up under the windowsill, there is a cat, and the cat is Trim.
So if you don't live in Sydney, we will put a picture of it up on our Nightlife website. That should be now if you have a look on the ABC Nightlife website. And so it took a long time for the statues to be reunited like this between Flinders and Trim the Cat.
It did. So Flinders has always had a bit of a following. I think people quite admire his skill, his intelligence, his personal bravery in what he was able to achieve. And I think people are quite taken by what is really a very sad life and a sad end to what was a fabulous career. So the story of the cat is a symbol of his humanity, if you like, and there were quite a lot of people who were very keen to have that recognised. And the movement for the statue was led by Vaughan Evans, who unfortunately passed away in 1993, so didn't see the statue of Trim unveiled. But he was a great maritime historian. There is the Vaughan Evans Library that's been named in his honour. He also was an honorary associate of the Powerhouse Museum, and he did also work as a consultant to the State Library of New South Wales.
And so the cat was very much organised by a group, including him, the statue, and they commissioned it and put it there behind Flinders, so they're kind of together.
They are. So the idea was always that they would be in constant companionship. John Cornwall did a fabulous work as the sculptor. So you can see Trim is still quite attentive. He's still got that little bit of independence about him, which made him a very loved animal, but also got him to a little bit of trouble and possibly had something to do with his untimely end. But one of the really magical things about the statue is the appeal, which was launched in 1995 to fund the work and its installation. And we have the files still at the library of people sending in donations and photos of their own brave cats. So the average donation was $5 or $10, but people were writing poems about Trim and sending them in and sending in drawings. One little girl gave $10 and here's my school assignment, because we had to do an assignment on someone who was brave, and she chose Trim the cat.
And so Trim the cat now has been rediscovered by a whole new generation.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think he adds a lot of whimsy to the library, and it's quite interesting to look through the correspondence. And librarians are traditionally sober people when we give information. We don't want to offer our own bias about what it is that we're providing. We're very committed to the provision of access and allowing people to pull out their own stories from our collections. But people just weren't able to hold back. So there's this fabulous vault of correspondence about this cat. And people are saying things in letters that you would not see in any other type of correspondence on any other library project. So you have all these really dreadful puns. So people are catatonic with delight at the latest donation. It's perfectly wonderful. There's lots of wetting of whiskers. And one very generous major donor gave a quite a significant contribution to the project. And the staff member noted that she was so excited she couldn't drink her sherry. And this is not the sort of thing that you would normally see in correspondence from the library. And I think the cat draws out that in people.
Definitely. It's a terrific story. Thanks so much for coming to tell us about it tonight.
Thank you.
Rachel Franks, New South Wales State Library Curator. And as I said, we'll put a photo of Trim up on our website. And if you live in Sydney or you're going to Sydney soon, go and check out the statue of Trim behind Flinders at the State Library.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.